Accession number 28671, Mr. Ronald Weedman, Reel 4. Now, we're talking about your time at number 1 Air Gunners School, Pembrey, from November 42 onwards. And we sort of, you were originally having a fair amount of trouble, I think it's fair to say, from what you've said, in hitting the air drogues.
Yeah.
Now, how did you improve? I mean, what was the secret of improving?
I think the secret was, when you came back from one of these firing courses, and you got the result, and you see only one bullet, you realise you either had to do better, or you were off the course. There was no ifs, nor buts. So then you had in your mind to analyse this factor of the speed of the target, the speed of your own aircraft, and the curve of pursuit of the tracers, which was all going, which came out every fifth one. You had to really get that organised, and you did. And I think I got the 5, which was the secret of going forward. But it was a load of work, and many, many times I've gone back and haven't had a hit. Not one hit. But this happened to all of them. But it was very hard indeed.
Now, what other training were you doing? So you're going up in the Blenheims in threes and firing at drogues. What else are you doing?
Well, it was solely consisting of air-to-air gunnery work. But you had other targets to go at. Those targets were at sea, because you had various coloured boys which you had to fire at low level.
Now, these are static targets.
That's right, yes. And that was a problem, because you were low down on the deck, especially. And when you get low down, aircraft start bucking about like the devil. But there was you fired from either port or starboard at these targets in the sea. Now, there was no pass out on that. It was only to give you some inspiration of seeing your bullets hit the water around these targets that you realised that it could be a submarine, it could be other things in the water which you had to destroy. But there was no pass out on that at all. You had about, I think it was about 10 flights regarding that. And then you had flights into parts of the coastline which had targets. These targets were very prominent. They were coloured.
What sort of targets? Ground targets?
Ground targets. They're in the shapes of tanks or mock-up aircraft. And you went in at a low-level attack. And again, your bullets were all coloured. So you had to pass out with the hits that you had on these static targets. And it was only 5 that you passed out on. But that was, that course lasted, I think it was 8 weeks.
So into January.
It was very concentrated course, because it was nearly all flying. And night flying came into it.
Now tell me about night flying.
Now you didn't, there was no firing at night time. Night flying was brought about to get you accustomed to going up in the dark, to going above the aerodrome out to sea, and only the stars the pilot. There was no, you weren't, I have thought, sure they would put us on some navigation thing, but no, it was solely to get you accustomed to night flying.
So you weren't being asked to do any navigational work?
No, none whatsoever.
You were just getting used to being in the dark?
That's right. Yes.
And up?
Yeah.
Were you actually at the guns and the turrets?
Yes, oh yes, you were sat there. You took it in turns, because the mid upper turrets were Blenheims.
And anything else you were doing? I mean, it's purely gunnery.
Purely gunnery, yes.
So were they doing a lot of work on stripping and stoppages on the ground?
Oh, yes, that was what I would call the priority of all things all the time.
Now tell me about that. Anything you remember about
it? If you had a stoppage, you had to work fast. That was this whole secret because the whole crew depended upon you for getting your guns organised, because the only things that were defending them.
Were there any common stoppages that you could identify now, or is it blurred away?
The most common stoppage, of course, was the bullet getting across, which it jumped out of the actual movement, and that you'd spot that straight away, so you'd be able to just flick it out, and then it would move forward. But you had to watch what you were doing when you were playing around with stoppages, especially on movements, because you get your fingers trapped if you don't watch out, and my God, it was damn dangerous. You'd have the end of your finger off.
Anything else you were doing while you were at Pembrey?
No, it was solely.
Was there any fighter affiliation? This is the business where you don't have any bullets in, but you have cine camera and there were fighters.
No.
None of that at this stage.
No.
Anything else you recall about Pembrey?
Only that we had some awful accidents.
Well, tell me about them.
The Blenheim was a beautiful aircraft to look at, but it was undermanned with power. It was a problem when it was in attacking convoys because it was short of, it only had two guns, some of them, and it was very poor. The carnage was dreadful, and there was always problems of the hydraulics gone from Burton, having to land without wheels and God knows what, and cartwheel, the most frightening accidents.
And you realised this at the time, that Blenheim wasn't reliable.
You see, when anything happens at a training place like that, if there's an aircraft comes down near the drome, any people that are waiting at dispersal to go out, they're immediately pushed into aircraft, immediately, and taken up, and taken just around for two or three circuits. It was a sort of a simulating exercise somehow to get you from thinking of the horrors that somebody's just torn to pieces, and that's it. But there were an awful lot.
Any accidents involving the other trainees, or were these accidents just...
No trainees, because, you see, each aircraft had a pilot and three trainees. So if one came down, there was a pilot and three trainees were killed instantly. And there was, as I say, some awful accidents. That did not deter you, as you would have thought, from saying, sod this, I'm not going forward, I've no future. It just didn't, because that was part of life, that somebody had to be killed, and that was it, even in training or in warfare.
So when did you leave Pembrey? Was that in January 43 or was it December 42?
I left Pembrey, it would be about beginning of February 43.
So just into February?
Yeah. When you passed out there...
Well, tell me about that. What happened now, when you passed out?
Now, the passing out is that, of course, you are told that you have achieved a certain percentage. I think it was 78% or something, pass out. Now, then you were prayed in and you were given the air gunner's badge, which was presented to you by an officer, usually a squadron leader, who shook your hand and wished you luck and all the rest of it. And you went straight away, you took your jacket off, and there was about four men there who sawed on the air gunner's badge. You're very proud of it. And you passed out and shook one of his hands. Now, from there...
Were you now an NCO?
You were a sergeant, yes. You became a sergeant. And you put your brand new stripes were sewn onto you at the same time that you got your egg on this badge.
Did everyone pass?
No.
What rate was it, do you think?
The rate, I would think, was about... Not... There'd be about 15% didn't pass through something that was wrong.
So what happened next? So it's early February 43.
Now then you were told where you were going to be posted to. Some went to Bomber Command, some went to Coastal Command, some went to the Liaison Command, which was operating into Germany with resistance people.
And did you have a preference for...
No, I didn't. But you see, you had to go where you were told. And I was given a factor of going to a squadron at Filton, which was, I didn't know, my eyesight was excellent, but I went on to what is called a prototype squadron, which was with Blenheim Fours again, but they had underneath four-gun trough of guns.
And you hang on, which squadron was this?
It was just called X Squadron, that was all, at Filton. Because it wasn't a numbered squadron, it was just called X.
Was it part of Bomber Command or not?
No, it was prototype.
No group?
No. It was involving, and it worked from Filton.
And this is February?
When?
February.
Yes, and I was there.
Now, what type of unit was this? Can you describe what the unit was?
You see, it was what I would call, not secretive, but it was there to, because it was realised that the Blenheims were vulnerable underneath the belly. And so they put four-gun troughs, and you laid on your tummy and fired them. Now, there were only six of us on this course.
Now, tell me about this. This is an experimental, so as well as the mid-upper.
The mid-upper had turrets, but it wasn't utilised, because they couldn't fire two. The aircraft couldn't take the strain of two firing.
So this was another turret that was experimentally
fitted? Yeah, it was fitted underneath the belly of the aircraft, and you laid on your tummy to fire it. And it was most horrible because you were right close to where your guns were, and you fired through prisms, which was a bit dreadful. And
What do you mean? Can you explain that a bit more? Prisms?
But you worked through sort of... it wasn't glass, it was perspex. But it was slanted so that you got views of aircraft coming at you from behind. It was like magnification somehow, but it was awful. And the actual hits that you achieved from drogues coming underneath you was so small. You didn't get one hit in 300, you just didn't. And how they persevered, really. We went from there to Chivena in North Devon.
To where?
Chivena.
This is still with X Squadron?
Yes.
And how do you spell Chivena?
Chivena.
Chivena, all right, Chivena. I've got an idea of it, yeah.
In North Devon. And then I went from there to Arius.
Hang on, what were you doing at Chivena?
We were just practicing on sand dunes there, firing into sand dunes on the beach.
Still using this...
This horrible contraption. And then we went from there to RAF St. Devil, which was in Cornwall near Newquay. And we used to fire into target areas inland, because Cornwall has some awful desolate areas inland. And we just saw they put up various targets for us to fire at. And so I worked from there on this X squadron.
Now, you were just an air gunner at this stage. You weren't a wireless operator air gunner.
Well, what had happened, I went on what they call a 10-day course from RAF Filton to Compton Baton on a wireless ops course.
Now, tell me about the wireless operator's course.
The wireless ops course was you went to this drone and you gave me an examination on what your knowledge was on Morse code. Well, with being in air crew and having to learn it at Bridlington, it was pretty good. So you went up in these small aircraft and you just had to tap things out and take messages from the people on the ground. And it was only what I would call a stopgap course. And your emblem that you got, your air gunner's course, became W or wireless operator. So you were given another sort of wing, wireless operator.
But so you are now a wireless operator, Edgar.
Yes. But from there, when I went back to Filton, that was when my career in the in aircrew finished, because I was involved in a very bad accident at Filton.
Now, is this before you went to Chivener and St. Ivel then?
Yes, yeah.
Now tell me about the accident.
The accident was at Filton, where we had a young pilot who hadn't been flying long, and the hydraulics went, which mean that it was a problem controlling it at low level. He had to make a belly landing. He made the belly landing.
Now, where were you? Because were you not in the belly on the go?
No, you had to stabilise yourself. You were various bands that you fastened around yourself to take the shock. The broad bands that you fastened around your tummy and around the top part of you, and you just held your head because you realised you're going to come to grief.
The crash was because of the hydraulics failure?
All failure, complete failure.
And where did he crash land? Was it at Filton?
At Filton itself.
On the ground?
Yeah.
And what do you remember of it as you came in?
Not a lot, because you just had to stabilise yourself that it was inevitable something was going to happen. When it did, there was an almighty crash noise slithering along, and you hoped to God that you wouldn't set on fire, which didn't happen. But, of course, planes have this step at the front, where they have like a snout, and that buckled all back and caught trapped the pilot. Well, the pilot was killed. And we did get out. There were two of us at the back, but we were in a mess.
What had happened to you?
You were cut and bruised, and, of course, you were shattered. You were frightened, I would say. And you went into hospital. I went in hospital at St. Athan's.
Oh, where?
At St. Athan.
Is that near Filton?
Near Filton, yeah. And I stayed in there for 6 weeks and then came out.
So when was this accident?
This was in 43.
February you joined them at Filton. So when would this be?
Yeah, it'd be about May 43.
And all that time had been at Filton?
Yep.
So you only move when you come out of hospital to Chivener and St. Ivel?
No, I went to Chivener and St. Ivel before training on piloting from this belly of the aircraft. We went on various sessions.
So you were at Filton, Chivener and St. Ivel, and then back to Filton?
That's right, yes.
No, I understand that. Makes it quite clear.
Yes, we meandered about all that part. And from...
Now,
from the hospital at St. Athan, I am very much recollection because your life at that time was in a turmoil. They told me that I wouldn't be able to proceed in aircrew.
Now, why not?
Because it's evident that my nerves must have gone. That's all I can say. I couldn't honestly say what had happened, but you had various medical and and it just went on.
Were you aware you'd lost your nerve? I mean, what signs were there?
Well, the thing was, of course, they wanted me to go in an aircraft. I wouldn't go near it. You were terrified to go near it. You just wouldn't. And they persevered. I've given them a persevering, but I realised I was one amongst thousands. And they couldn't persevere with one, because there were thousands of people waiting on the touchline, which they had to move with. So then, I went.
So
after going,
how long were you in hospital for? The crash was round about May.
I was in hospital about 6 weeks.
So into June. And then where did you go? You went back to Filton.
No, I went from there to a place called the Isle of Sheppey.
And what was it there?
It was just, that was a sort of stopgap where I had nothing to do. But you see, I'd been demoted from a sergeant down to LAC. They can't take away your brevet, but they can take away your rank. Because, you see, rank in aircrew was acting rank. It wasn't substantive.
So you were just an aircraftman first class? Or
a leading aircraftman.
Sorry, leading aircraftman.
Yeah, so I went to there.
And how did you feel about that? Because you'd worked together.
Damned awful. Awfully demoralised you. And I went from there, came to Blackpool.
Now, hang on, what were you doing at Sheppey?
Literally nothing.
Was it an actual airfield?
It was an airfield. It had Spitfires there, and there were about 10 of us, which were ex-air crew. That's something. Some of them had been demoted because of doing stupid things.
Was this where they were trying to persuade you to go back to aircrew?
They never did try to persuade me. They just took tests and said, well, I'm afraid you understand, you're showing no signs of capability. And in that case, well, you weren't 100%. You'd have let the side down. You couldn't be sort of a weak part of a team. It just was non-existent.
So you were failing these tests?
That's right, yeah.
But did you have any duties at all?
None whatsoever. No, you just did nothing.
So how long were you at Sheppey for?
I was there for 6 weeks.
So June to July?
Yeah, then we came up to Blackpool.
What happened at Blackpool?
Well, at Blackpool, in more tests, I was in some private houses there, and you just went on parade. And you did literally nothing. I was there for 3 weeks. And then I went from there down to Sutton Coalfield near Birmingham, which was a maintenance unit, 216 maintenance unit. And when I got there, this
now,
whole...
216 maintenance
unit.
That's all it was called?
Yeah. And it was aircraft paint and thinners and all the rest of it. And I remember going to the guards and I said, what have you come here for? And I said, well, I've been sent from Blackpool, ex-air crew. And they put me in a hut with about another 10 people. And they didn't know what to do. And I said, what have you come here for? I said, well, I've been posted. And of course,
what was the unit doing?
It had masses of paint and stuff for painting aircraft. Painting hangars, thousands of cans of this, that, and the other.
So it was a paint supply depot?
Yeah, but a huge place. And I just used to go on parade in the morning, and the sergeant would say, well, I've no work for you. You've no proper trade. And you just go back to your billet, and you'd sit, and you'd read, and you felt demoralised. And then... I was told...
So this was when about? Well, it'd be August 43?
Yes.
For how long?
About 3 weeks I was there. And then I was sent to some place just outside Birmingham, Dudley. And I was given various tests as
now,
to what...
what sort of place is this?
This was an area place for aircrew to try and get them into some trade. And they said, what would you like to be? Well, they offered me... There was... air traffic control, and there was radar, and what else was there? There was another one, I forget what the other one was. But at any rate, I decided I would go on to radar.
Now, why radar?
Well, because radar, it was sort of, I realised that it was the next stage to the observer corps. It was reporting of aircraft. It was totally different to the observer corps because it was done through in great blocks. I'll tell you all about that in a minute.
What about, were you suitable for it? I mean, how did they assess that you were suitable?
Well, there, you had to pass exams. And of course, I thought, well, I'm never going to pass these damned exams because they were very strict. And I don't know how I passed them, but I did.
And what I think type of exams were there?
There were exams regarding mathematics and written compositions, various extracts from what you had done in civilian life. That all came into it somehow. And what I had achieved at the Allen Technical School, this was another thing that I realised that was a godsend, that my marks that I'd attained there were so high, which showed that my mathematical sort of creation was there. And so I was said that you will go on a course.
Now, anything else happened at Dudley?
No, no. I went back to Sutton Coalfield, and within a week I was told that I was going to be posted to RAF Yedsbury in Wiltshire.
So this is when you're back in. Now, when is it you went to Yatesbury? Can you put a date on that?
Yes, Yatesbury was about September 43. This was number one radio school. And on one radio school was a very secretive place.
Is it radio school?
Yes. But it was also the training of radar personnel.
Now, what happened when you got there? How did they receive you?
Oh, they thought it was marvellous to get someone from air crew, because they'd never had this before. And, of course, then you were there for 6 weeks.
Now, how did they start your training?
Immediately, you were on, went on to shift work, because radar was all shift work, like 6 to 10 and 6 to 2, 2 to 10. And 10 to 3 shift work.
So they were introducing you to shift work?
Oh yes, straight away. And then you had to learn the different types of radar. Now that was, it was completely alien to anything I'd done before. Completely alien.
Now what types of radar were there?
The types of radar, they were called CHL and CH. Now CH is chain home, because you became a member of the radar system, which is chain home. CHL is chain home low, which was reporting of low flying aircraft.
Now, what was the difference between them, really? I mean, as far
well, there were difference between them that one was centimetre. It was for low angled plotting. The other one was chain home, was up to about, would plot up to about 100,000 feet. It was very high. So there were two different types of radar. I didn't know this until we got there, and you had to learn a lot. The 6 weeks there was solely spent in learning the formulas of Ohm's law and old spark gaps and all the rest of it that came into it. That was a very hard course. I didn't think I would have managed it.
So this wasn't practical. This is just scientific training.
Yes. It was practical in the sense that you had to learn to control, to work a system with your left hand, which was called a gonio. And this gonio factor controlled a trace in front of you, which you levelled up at an aircraft, and that gave you an the bearing and distance of the aircraft. And that was very, very, very hard indeed. And it's strange how I'd forgotten all about that until 2 years ago. I'm rambling on, but this must come into it, where I'm secretary of the Radar Association now. And I met a girl who, she came to me and she said, you know, you call Ron Wheatman. I said, yes. He said, well, you were with me at number one radio school, way back in 43. I said, well, I can't remember you at all. She said, well, I remember your name. And she said, I'm going to tell you what you received on your final. Can you remember it, your exam? I said, no, I cannot. She said, well, you got 82%. And she said, I got 83. So that was a thing which flashed right back. But from this radio.
So you were doing theoretical and practical training.
Practical, yes. And it was very highly secretive.